Chapter 18. Philip. The Pella coasted through the black. One node in a network of dark ships that traded tight beams and compared strategies and planned. Stealth wasn't possible in the strict sense. The enemy would be scanning the vault of the heavens for the Free Navy's ships, just as much as they were tracking the drive plumes of Earth and Mars and everyone else in the system. The universe was billions of points of unwavering light. Stars and galaxies stretching out through time and space, their photon streams bent by gravity lensing and shifted by the speed of the universe's expansion. The flicker of a drive might be overlooked or confused with another light source, or hidden by one of the widely scattered asteroids that inhabited the system, like dust motes in a cathedral. There was no way to know how many of their ships the Inners had managed to identify and track. There was no certainty that their own sensor arrays had targeted all of the so-called combined navy's vessels. The scale of the vacuum alone built uncertainty. The Inners were easier, since so many of theirs had burned for Ceres. But who's to say there weren't a few scattered hunters, dark and ballistic in the void? Marco had a handful of Free Navy like that. Or at least, that was what Carl said. Ships that hadn't even been used in the first attacks, cruising in their own orbits like warm asteroids, sleepers, waiting for their moment. And maybe that was even true, though Philip hadn't heard it directly from his father yet. And he liked to think his father would tell him anything. The days were long and empty, wound tightly around a single, overwhelming question. The counterstrike would come. The attack that would prove that stepping back from Ceres was a tactical choice and not a show of weakness. More than anything that had come before, it would be the event, Marco said this and Philip believed it, that made clear what made the Free Navy unbeatable. In the gym and the galley, the crew speculated. Tycho Station was the heart of the collaborationist wing of the OPA. Mars had suffered least in the initial attack and deserved the same punishment as Earth. Luna had become the new center of UN power. Kelso Station and Rhea had rejected the Free Navy and shown their true colors. Or there were the mining operations scattered throughout the belt that answered to Earth-based corporations. They were easy pickings and couldn't be defended. Or taking a solid hold on Ganymede, claiming and protecting the food supply of the belt. There was even some talk of sending recovery forces out through the ring. Take back from the colonies what should never have been there in the first place. Or install platforms above the new planets and extract tribute from them. Reverse the political order and put all the bastards at the bottom of all the wells in chains. Philip only smiled and shrugged, letting it look like he knew more than he did. Marco hadn't told even him what the plan was. Not yet. And then, the message came. I always respected you. That was how she began. Michio Pa, the head of the conscription effort. Philip remembered her, but he hadn't had an opinion about her before now. She was a competent leader. A little famous for stepping in when the behemoth's captain had lost his mind in the slow zone. His father liked her because she hated Fred Johnson, had defected from him, and because she was a belter and pretty to look at, and the face that the belt would see when the colony ships cracked their guts open and spilled out their treasures. Only now, she stared into a camera on her ship, her hair pulled back, her dark eyes serious. She didn't look pretty. I have always respected you, sir. The work you have done for the independence of the belt has been critical, and I'm proud to be part of it. I want to make it very clear before we go forward that my loyalty to our cause is unwavering and complete. On sober reflection, and after a great deal of consideration, I find I have to disagree with the change in the plan for the conscription. While I understand the strategic importance of denying materiel to the enemy, I can't, in good conscience, withhold it from the citizens of the Belt, who are in immediate need. Because of this, I have chosen to proceed with the conscription efforts as originally outlined. Technically, this is disobeying an order. But I have great faith that when you reflect on how the needs of our people brought us to form the Free Navy, you'll agree it is the best way forward. She signed off with a Free Navy salute, the one his father had created when he made everything else. Philip queued it up again, watching from the start to the end again, aware of Marco's gaze on him as much as the woman on the screen. The galley around them was empty. No, not just empty. Emptied. Whether they'd been ordered to or not, the crew of the Pella had evacuated the space and left it for Marco and Philip. If it hadn't been for a smell of curry lingering in the air, the stains of coffee on the table, it might have been their first time on the ship. He didn't know how many times his father had viewed the message, how he had taken it the first time he'd seen it, or what the mild expression he wore now meant. Philip's uncertainty knotted at the bottom of his abdomen. Being shown the message was a test, and he didn't know quite what he was meant to do with it. After the second time Michio Pa saluted, Marco stretched his shoulders back, a physical symbol that they were switching to the next part of whatever their conversation was. "It's mutiny," Philip said. "It is," Marco said, his voice and expression reasonable and calm. "Do you think she's right?" "No," leapt to Philip's throat, but he stopped it there. It was too obvious an answer. He tried yes in his mind, feeling the pressure of his father's attention like it was heat radiating from him. He discarded it too. "It doesn't matter," he said slowly. "Whether she's right or wrong is beside the point. She broke with your authority." Marco reached out and tapped the tip of Philip's nose the way he'd done when they were only father and son, not war leader and lieutenant. Marco's eyes softened, his focus shifting elsewhere. Philip felt a momentary and irrational stab of loneliness. "She did," Marco said. "Even if she were right, she isn't, but if, how could I let this go? It would be an invitation to chaos. Chaos." He chuckled, shaking his head. Anger would have been less frightening. Philip's uncertainty shifted in his gut. Were they destroyed then? Was it all falling apart? The vision of the system his father had dreamed. Void cities, the Belt blooming into a new kind of humanity, free from the oppression of Earth and Mars, the Free Navy as the order of the worlds, stuttered. He caught a glimpse of what the other future could look like. The death and the struggle and the war. The corpse Earth and the ghost town Mars and the shards of the Free Navy picking at each other until nothing was left. It was what Marco meant when he said chaos. Philip was sure of that. Nausea welled up in him. Someone should have kept that from happening. He shook his head. "Someday," Marco said, and then again, still without finishing the thought. "Someday." "Do we do?" Philip asked. Marco shrugged with his hands. "Stop trusting women," he said. Then flicked a foot against the wall, launching himself to the doorway. Philip watched as Marco grabbed a handhold and pulled himself away down the hall toward his cabin. All the questions he hadn't answered floating invisibly behind him. Left alone, Philip killed the sound to the screen and replayed her message again. He'd met this woman. He'd been in a room with her and heard her voice, and he hadn't seen her for the traitor she was, for the agent of chaos. She saluted, and he tried to see fear in her, or malice, anything more than a professional delivering a message he expected to be badly received. He played the message again. Her eyes were black and hate-filled, or steeled against dread. Her gestures were soaked in contempt, or controlled like a fighter preparing to lose a match. With a little practice and will, he found he could see anything he chose in her. A soft sound came from behind him. Sarta sloped into the room feet first and caught herself in a foothold on the wall, locking her ankle in place and absorbing the inertia with her knees. Her smile had the same bleakness that Philip felt, and he suffered a moment's anger that she should feel what he did. Carl's voice came from the lift, talking in low, careful tones. Rosenfeld answered, too low to make out the words. They knew Marco was gone then. The private audience concluded. Sarta pointed to the screen with her chin. Ese es some shit, ¿qué? Fishing for information. Looking to know what Marco hadn't seen fit to tell her or anyone else. He saw it coming, Philip said. He wasn't even lying. Marco might not have said as much, but it was still true. Philip tapped his temple. No to expect it. Everything going to be just fine. 3 more days on the float, and Philip knew it wasn't only the crew of the Pella who were feeling anxious. Every hour, it seemed, brought another round of contact requests. Encrypted tight-beam messages flooded into the Pella's queue and waited there for Marco's response. Rosenfeld, as part of the inner circle, stepped in where he could. He went so far as to appropriate the command deck as a kind of private office. The war center in absentia until Marco came back out of his tent, whatever that meant. For Philip, it was all an exercise in projecting competence. His father had a plan. He'd gotten them all this far, and there was no reason to doubt he would get them the rest of the way. The others agreed with him, or at least seemed to when he was in the room. He wondered what they said when he was elsewhere. They'd all been through battle together. They'd shared their victories and the long, patient hours waiting for their traps to spring. This was different. The waiting was the same, but not being sure what they were waiting for made it feel like maybe they were waiting for nothing, even for him. Near the end of the third day, Rosenfeld asked Philip to join him in the command center. The older man looked tired, but his cyst-ridden skin made reading his expressions difficult. Rosenfeld had turned all the screens off. The command center felt smaller without their displays to give the illusion of depth and light. Rosenfeld floated beside one of the crash couches. His body canted a few degrees from the ship in a way that made him seem both taller and subtly threatening. "So, young Master Enaros," Rosenfeld said. "It seems we have a problem." "Don't see it," Philip said. But the amusement in the older man's eyes was enough to show how weak his words sounded. Rosenfeld pretended Philip hadn't spoken. "The longer we go without responding to, call them, changes in the situation, the longer we go, the more doubt starts to grow, yeah? Father Enaros is the face and voice of the Free Navy. Has been since the beginning. His skill, yeah? His peculiar gift. But," Rosenfeld spread his hands, "but he isn't here." "He has a plan," Philip said. "We have a problem. We can't wait for him much longer. Haven't told anyone. Hasn't found its way to the grapevine. But the problem's now, not tomorrow. Even the light lag may make us too late now." "What is it?" Philip asked. "Witch of Endor. It's at Palace. All the cash safes we threw out into the void. Captain Al-Dujaili has started gathering them back up. Says it's under orders from his commander. And he doesn't mean us. That's the 5th ship broken for Pa. Meantime, the butcher's on Ceres, his ass keeping Dawes's chair warm. Calling for a meeting of the OPA clans, yeah? Black Sky, Carlos Walker, administration on Reyes looking to send a delegation. Free Navy made a statement when we broke Earth's chains. Statement was, the revolution is already over. That we'd won. Inevitable. Already happened us. Only now, maybe not. Philip's gut was tight. Anger warmed his throat and shoved his jaw forward like a tumor at the base of his jaw. He didn't know who he was angry with, but the rage was deep and powerful. Maybe Rosenfeld saw it, because his voice changed, became softer. Your father, he's a great man. Great men, they're not like you or me. They have other needs, other rhythms. It's what sets them apart. But sometimes they go so far into the void, we lose sight of them. They lose sight of us. That's where little people like me come through, yeah? Keep the engines running. Keep the filters clean. Do the needful things until the great man comes back to us. Yeah, Philip said, the rage still shoving its way up his neck, filling his head. Worst thing we can do is wait, Rosenfeld said. Better that we point all our ships the wrong direction than that we leave them too long floating. Change it later. Bring them back. They think the situation shifted. Put them on the burn. They know they're going somewhere. Yeah, Philip said. See that? Time comes to say it. If it's not him, it's going to be me. For him, yeah, but me. Not a bad thing if you stood with. Make everyone know it's me for him. Not another pa. You want to give orders to the Navy? I want orders given, Rosenfeld said. Don't care who does it. Barely care what the orders are, just there are some. No one but him, Philip said. There was a buzz in his voice. His hands ached, and he didn't know why until he looked and saw them in fists. My father made the Free Navy. He makes the calls. Then he has to make them now, and he won't listen to me. I'll talk to him, Philip said. Rosenfeld lifted a hand in thanks and blinked his thick, pebbled eyes. He's lucky to have you, Rosenfeld said. Philip didn't answer. Just took one of the handholds, turned himself, and launched down the throat of the ship where the lift would have risen and fallen if there were any up and down to guide it. His mind was a clutter of different emotions. Anger at Michio Pa, distrust of Rosenfeld, guilt for something he couldn't put a name to, fear, even a kind of desperate elation, like pleasure without being pleasure. The walls of the lift tube skinned past him as he drifted almost imperceptibly to the port. If I reach the crew deck without touching the wall, everything will be all right. An irrational thought. And still, when he grabbed a handhold and swung into the corridor that led to Marco's quarters without having to correct his path, he felt a little relief. And when he reached his father's door, it was even justified. The fear he'd carried with him, of his father wrecked by betrayal, glass-eyed, unshaven, maybe even weeping, were nothing like the man who opened the cabin door. Yes, the sockets of his eyes were a little darker than usual. Yes, there was a scent in his room like sweat and metal. But his smile was bright, and his focus clear. Philip found himself wondering what had kept him locked up so long. If he felt a twinge of annoyance, it was overwhelmed by the warmth of seeing his father back again. Behind Marco, tucked in at the edge of one of the cabinets, a strip of fabric spoke of something light and feminine. Philip wondered which of the crew had been here to comfort his father, and for how long. Marco listened to Philip's report with a gentle attention, nodding with his hands at each point of importance, letting Philip cover everything, Fred Johnson, the Witch of Endor, Rosenfeld's half-spoken threat to take the reins without interrupting him. Philip felt the anger slip away as he spoke, his gut relaxing as the anxiety faded, until by the end he wiped away a tear that had nothing to do with sorrow and everything to do with relief. Marco put a hand on Philip's shoulder, a soft grip that held the two of them together. "We pause when it's time to pause, and we strike when it's time to strike," Marco said. "I know," Philip said. "It's only..." He didn't know how to end the thought, but his father smiled anyway, as if he understood. Marco gestured at the cabin system, opening a connection request for Rosenfeld. The pebble-skinned man appeared on the screen almost at once. "Marco," he said, "good to have you back among the living." "To the underworld, and returned with wisdom," Marco said, a sharpness in his voice. "Didn't frighten you with my absence, did I?" "Not as long as you came back," Rosenfeld said through a rough laugh. "We have a full plate, old friend. Too much needs doing." Philip had the sense that a second conversation was happening between the men he couldn't quite parse, but he kept quiet and watched. "Less soon," Marco said. "Send me the tracking data for all the ships still answering to Pa's commands. You tell your guard ships at Palace which of Endor's gone rogue. Jam it, kill it, and send the battle data to us. No mercy for traitors." Rosenfeld nodded. "And Fred Johnson?" "Butcher will bleed in his turn," Marco said. "Never fear. This war's just beginning."